Welcome, everybody. It's the Shop Notes Podcast, episode number 191. John, Logan, Phil, we're all here for another rousing discussion of woodworking topics, updates from Shop Notes, Woodsmith, and Popular Woodworking Magazine, and a discussion on the accessories that clutter tool purchases. We're also at the end of an issue for Woodsmith, and so there's a little bit of a frenzy going on here to clean things up. Special thanks to our sponsor. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, TightBond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack, think SpeedSet, and short clamp time, to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, TightBond 3. Look to TightBond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit TightBond.com. Now, the last episode we were talking about Logan getting his new tools. And then, so just have a few comments from that one. Jim writes, how does one view the show notes? And I do refer to stuff like, if you're listening to this on the radio and don't get to see what we're doing, like you do on the YouTubes, if you go to shopnotes.com/podcast, you'll find show notes pages for each of the episodes. I try and put those up there. Admittedly, some of them will be a few days after the episode posts, but day job.
That's what we call the oh crap factor.
Yeah. Right.
Oh crap, yeah. We didn't get that up.
Yeah.
Hang in there.
First and last, 4779 says, okay, now you guys need to add a safety advisory to the show. I was eating a bowl of ice cream when you guys worked through the shrinking, expanding materials bit, hint suppository.
Yeah. Can ice cream come out of your nose when you like laugh? Is that a thing?
Was it a gag? I just wasted this bowl of ice cream because I'm not going to eat it now.
Yeah.
Right. Lost, yeah. He said, P.S. Rocky Road / Black Walnut.
Ooh. Yeah. So, oh, yeah.
Wood Tick Greg says, Logan, I have two Burke machines. Great for a home hobbyist. I have a number 4 horizontal. Mm-hmm. I also have a with a vertical attachment and a Powermatic version of the knee mill you are describing. Powermatic only made that machine for a few years. It's a poor man's Bridgeport, but for me, they're perfect because I took them apart and got them in my basement shop. The Powermatic knee mill isn't ridiculous as far as height goes, so it works. I use them to make woodworking tools, like carbide insert chisels, etc. You'll dig that machine, as it's not a huge investment. Now, tooling is another story.
So that's why you buy a used one, because then you inherit all the tooling.
All the tooling, yes.
All the tooling.
Yeah. And speaking of some of your new tools, like you have the radial arm drill press behind you. Yeah.
Yes, I do. Yep.
So
in all of its crusty glory.
Yeah. Norman was a busy woodworker. Pattern maker for a long time, and photos of his shop bear that out.
Oh, yes.
But for all the metal chips and dust and whatever, other than the wipe down, those tools are in decent shape.
Yeah, and I think that is, speaking as a younger generation, that's the difference between us and the older generation. Like my great grandpa, man, he took care of everything he had. It didn't matter if it was the Sears and Roebuck brand, whatever. He took care of it. As a young person, I don't necessarily take care of stuff like I should. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like getting some of this old stuff, because I know that it's been taken care of, you know, and I would like to continue to take care of it. So, yeah, it's all in pretty good shape. Like, it's all to the point where I have VFDs on the way. They deliver tomorrow, I think.
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to tear these down and restore them. They're all in usable shape.
Right.
What I'm interested in is getting this guy hooked up. I'm pointing to the radial arm drill press behind me. I want to see how much runouts on that spindle.
Yeah.
So, because I had the old Delta drill press from our photo studio. And that had a bit of run out. That was a drill press that was road hard, put away wet. Mm-hmm. It might not even got put away. I mean, it was just really hard.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested to see, because my experience in these vintage machines thus far is that they are just built to a different standard. And I mentioned that to my dad when we were picking these up. My dad also made a comment like, holy cow, there is a lot of stuff in Norman shop. And I said, oh yeah, there is. Like, yes, there is. He's like, I don't know how he works in there. I'm like, I mean, he worked in there for 50 years. That's why it looks like this. Like, he ran a business out of that shop.
Yeah.
That's why there is, I mean, there's just so much stuff. He did sell me, I think last time I was speculating on if I could get him to sell me one of his spindle sanders, he did sell me one of them. So I ended up with the knee mill, the radial arm drill press, and a State B4 spindle sander. He had 4 spindle sanders. Okay. I mean, I was like, hey, Norman, you're going to sell me a spindle sander? He's like, yeah, I'll sell you that one over there. And I looked at it. He's like, no, not that one, the one next to it. I didn't realize there was another one that was like covered in stuff, and I didn't see it. One thing I mentioned to my dad is when there was that mill, that knee mill, that Burke, it's a U.S. machinery tool company. Burke was the company that bought that company, so I'll refer to it as a Burke mill. That Burke mill, it weighs about 2,000 pounds, about 2,200 pounds. So getting it out of where it was kind of a hassle.
Okay.
Because I brought my A-frame gantry crane. I was going to lift it up and then slide a pallet under it so I could put my pallet jacks under it. However, there was, I think, too much stuff in the way. Like, it would have been a trick getting it in there. And when we got it into the driveway, finally, we had to put the gantry crane on blocks to get it high enough to lift the mill high enough to put it on the pallet that I built. So we ended up using a lever, but you know, when we were sitting there messing with it, I told my dad, like, man, look how like nice and smooth this thing turned still. Like, you know, almost 85 years later, I think this mill was made in the 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
So almost 80 years later, it's still moved. And he looks at me and he's like, it's a machinist tool. Like, duh, dummy. Like, they move. And my dad's around machinery like that a lot. Yeah. But he's like, duh. Like, this is not a woodworking tool, you Neanderthal. This is a machinist tool. You know?
Yeah.
So that's, I guess what I'm getting at is this is also considered a machinist tool. So
right.
Everything on it slides so smooth. The head glides back and forth. I do have to mess with that pivoting mechanism because that head swings left and right in an arc. I've found it's kind of hard to get it to lock fully. It might just need those. There's a pair of jam nuts on there. I haven't found the jelly nuts yet, but the jam nuts might need tightened down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to run really, really nicely.
Yeah. So. I mean, the quill moves really well. And when we unlocked the radial, the function. Slide on it, like the head slides back and forth really smooth, which is impressive. And I totally get what your dad's saying about machinist tools.
Yeah.
They're supposed to do that. Yes. However, the fact that
80 years,
and it's still sliding like that is impressive.
Yep. Yep. So I will have a bit of what I think one of the coolest things about all these, and it's kind of hiding behind my big ear. They all have like lights on them.
Yeah.
And which is really fun. Like, and the lights all work still. So it's pretty cool. This is a Walker Turner brand, and I've seen Walker Turner stuff before. It comes up for sale a lot. Walker Turner must have been a pretty big brand back in the day. Because I see stuff in Des Moines here. We don't generally see machinist tools for sale, but I see Walker Turner bandsaws and drill presses pop up pretty regularly.
Yeah.
There's actually a benchtop Walker Turner for sale in Des Moines right now. I can't find any info. There is not a model number on this, but there is a serial number. And it sounds like what Walker Turner did is as they made machines, they designated this is an 1140. So it's a RD1140. It says serial number RD1140. They're calling it a serial number, but that's more or less the model number because all the paperwork you can find from Walker Turner, it says, you know, radial drill RDJ 1117, also known as serial numbers RD1140, RD1180. Oh. Like, so I don't know if it was like a sub model number. But this entire system up here is not factory from what I can tell. The on off switch has a fast and a slow, which is interesting to me. Because it's not a variable speed motor. So I wonder if those switches aren't wired to a variable, not a variable frequency, but two different frequencies for that motor. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how that operates. So there will be a little bit of discovery and probably, hopefully not, but probably breaking something as I'm trying to get this thing wired up to work.
Because speaking of Walker Turner, isn't his son a country singer now?
Walker Turner Jr.? Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'll have to look that up.
Founder's grandson, I think. Yeah. So, but nope, I'm pretty excited about it.
The other son was a Texas Ranger, I believe.
Mm. Yeah. Walker Turner, Texas Ranger. Yeah, that's true.
So going back to something Logan was talking about, John, in a previous life, you worked at a cabinet shop.
Mm-hmm.
What was the process for keeping a tidy shop or machine maintenance there? Do you remember? Like, if it broke, like last guy touched it, has to fix it, kind of?
Basically. It was usually me. I was the one breaking stuff. I was the young guy. I don't know. Yeah, it was just what same stuff we kind of do here in the shop is, you know, every week, couple weeks, a month, you'd be like, okay, time to clean up the shop. And we had one of those huge dust collectors that you could get inside. It was up on like a tower. It's kind of like a little water tower type thing where you had to get in there and clean out the bags and stuff. And it was quite the process, but yeah, it wasn't much different than what we do here, I guess. So.
Oh, okay.
But
I didn't know if they had a
schedule
end of the day or end of the week kind of all the tools would be wiped down kind of a thing.
End of the day, you'd kind of clean up your own area. But
yeah.
And then every, you know, couple weeks, if you had a break between jobs, you'd do a more extensive cleanup. But we're just winging it, you know, hoping OSHA didn't show up.
Right.
So.
I think it's interesting because that, John, that would have been what, early 2000s?
Around 2002 to 2005.
We'll say. So like everything there would have definitely been, you know, more modern sealed bearings and stuff. Like, I think it'd be interesting to see what a machine shop, cabinet shop like that would have looked like back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, because that's when you have, you know, oiling maintenance, you have to oil machines, you have to grease machines, you know, like. Maybe not in the 70s, but definitely earlier than that, you know, where there's actual maintenance you have to do versus everything sealed ball bearings, you change it when it starts squeaking.
Right.
You know? Because then I think you probably have a little bit more of that.
Yeah. Yeah, we had some older tools, but most of the stuff was pretty new. We had a big sliding table saw and like a big belt sander, panel sander type thing that were probably of European origin.
Yeah.
But they were, most of the stuff was pretty new.
Yeah. So. The spindle sander you have, Logan, that you got, I was kind of impressed. I was just turning, you know, just hand rotating the spindle and was amazed at the amount of vertical throw on it.
The spindles on that thing are 9 inches long.
Yeah.
Like, it's huge.
Yeah,
it's a State B4, which is a very common sander. State made machinery for a long, long time. And it's, I think, let me rephrase this. The different diameter spindles have different throws.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, the bigger diameter ones are longer. The smaller ones are shorter. Now, I'm not sure if those are factory. They could be a set that Norm picked up over the years, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they, yeah, they have a big throw on them. The reason that Norman decided to sell this one to me is something in the on-off switch is messed up. So there's like a little breaker lever. So there's two boxes. There's the on-off switch, but then there's a breaker box. He's like, you just have to turn on the breaker box. I'm like, well, I'm going to gut it anyways to run single phase in my run off single phase.
Oh, so, yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't that big a deal. But
yeah,
what I'm impressed with, and I think the grizzly that we have is the same height, is their chest height. They're not like a table saw height. It is a solid
it's taller, 10
inches
yeah.
taller. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's very tall, which is kind of a pain when you're trying to fit it in somewhere in your shop. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't share a common height with other tools. So it is often, it looks like it will be the thing that's in the way. Like right now it's sitting at the end of what's going to be my miter saw station. Well, if I leave it there, I can't get a 10-foot board off that one side because it's going to hit the spindle sander.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas if it was lower, I could.
Right.
But I'm thinking it may live right next door to the big bandsaw, like on the corner of my table saw bandsaw area.
Oh.
Because there's a fire extinguisher there right now, so just got to find a new place for that. So, yeah, but nope. I was very, very, happy to bring all this stuff home. Norman was happy for the room, which it was funny. Moved three big pieces of equipment out of his shop, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, you would have thought that there would have been a lot more room in here when you moved those out. And there was not, So
it just, all the other stuff just kind of flowed right into where.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
All right. That makes sense.
Yep.
Because along with the mill, the knee mill, you got a couple of boxes of accessories to go with it.
Yeah. My dad's a very, very smart man. And he said, hey, what did you bring for totes? I'm like, well, crap, I didn't bring any totes. He's like, get your butt in your mom's car, drive over to Menards quick. And buy some totes. And we did. I did. And we filled them up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got, so the knee mill has three vices with it, a giant ruckle, I think was the big one. And Phil carried that from my driveway over to the shop. It probably weighs what? 70 pounds.
Oh yeah. It's a solid. Yeah. Like, I was trying to set it onto the bed and then John came over and helped me and it's beefy.
She's thick. Mm-hmm. Then there's a little rotary vise with it, like a kind of like the one Phil bought.
Yeah.
And then there is a different one that's like a quick release vise.
Yeah. Like a speed lock or something like that. Or
yeah,
like
yeah. It. And I don't know what brand it is. It gives me Chinesium vibes, but I don't think it is.
Yeah.
Just knowing that it's from the, you know, probably 70s. I don't think it is, but maybe. Got a bunch of parallels for machining, for holding work and stuff. Bunch of bits. So a bunch of end mills. End mills with different radii. End mills that are tapered, which are interesting. So almost like a dovetail bit. Or a reverse dovetail bit, almost like a countersink bit. So, like, the walls. And I think these may be, like, part of what Norm was doing with these. You know, some of them are, like, half-degree taper. So you think that bit's a straight bit, but it's not. So it's sneaky. So, like, that. Some little, almost little bottle jacks, little jacks, machinist jacks. There's a bunch of stuff in there, man. Like, I haven't went through it all yet. It was one of those, like, I'm moving stuff. My dad's moving stuff. Norm's sitting in his chair pointing, like, put that in the box. Put that in the box. Get that. Take that. You have to take that because you have a scrap yard as well as I do. Like, that type of thing. So, yeah, it's just, it was fun. It was a blast. You know, I appreciate Norm giving me this or selling me the stuff. And everything sent with it. So it'll be fun. I had a, Colin took, see, this is why I like having Colin's down here this week. That's why I like having Colin down here. Cause he's the, he's that young Instagrammer, so he's always taking photos and putting them on our social media and stuff. And had a couple guys say, what are you going to use a vertical or knee mill for in a woodworking shop? And my smart ass said, well, full depth mortises in one pass. Like, duh. Isn't that pretty obvious? But I was telling you guys when you guys were here filming this week, and you know, we mentioned it briefly, like, I think I really want to use it for like making hardware, making drawer pulls, knobs, you know. I really, the tool making path is something I went down a little bit, and I'd like to, I don't have the time for it, which is why I wanted the vertical mill, because it speeds it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, making tools and stuff like that, I think it'll be very cool.
Little word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Tightbond. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, Tightbond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to Tightbond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit tightbond.com. And like we said, it's a lot smaller than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it takes up room.
Yeah, but I mean, footprint-wise, it's not that much bigger than that drill press behind you.
No, it isn't. It really isn't. Actually, the drill press, well, yeah, they're about the same. You know, yeah. if you extend that drill press head out all the way towards me, yeah, it would take up as much room.
Yeah.
The table's not huge on the mill. It's a 10 by 36 table. I think it has... We looked up the catalog, and I think it said it had 24 inches of travel, I think, which is, it's perfect, you know, for what I'm doing, for me just messing around. And I don't know if we talked about this last, I think we talked about this last podcast. You know, there's some times where it's like, I don't really need this tool, but the opportunity is there to buy it at a good price and help somebody get a little bit of room in their shop. So,
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Okay. I think you'll find room.
It's a service that you're providing.
Right.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the ability to just create parts.
Yes.
You know, even for other tools or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's like,
you know, service of the other machines that you have in your shop.
Yeah.
Especially 100%. Considering their age.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if I need to mill something for one of these machines, I can do it. Or, you know, my buddy Bobby Three Fingers, he just cut his sawmill head in half on his wood miser to extend it out. So now he can cut really, really wide. I think we talked about that. But he had a giant block of aluminum that slides inside of both halves of the head, and he had to bring it to a machine shop to have them... I think they had to like bevel the corners because there's welds inside of the tube, or maybe the tube's rounded or whatever. And they had to cut a groove down it because there's a weld seam down the top of the head.
Yeah.
And I asked Bobby, like, how much did they charge? And it was several hundred. It was more than I paid for the mill.
No.
And I'm like, it's that type of thing where it's like, if I have to do something, and I'm going to have to do some stuff on that jointer.
Yeah.
If I have to do it and I can do it here in the shop for, you know, in 3 or 4 hours, I just paid for that mill versus what I would have paid a machine shop. So, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to mess around with. Plus, then there's reason for Phil to come out and just dink around on a vertical mill.
Yeah. Let's not discount that at all.
Yeah.
That's, and especially until Chris gets like his little benchtop one moving. I'm excited about both of those mills just for the idea of it's a very related but different skill.
Yes.
Or set of techniques, and it's curiosity for me.
Yeah.
Well, because a mill has, because we were trying to describe it to some people who didn't know what a milling machine is, because it almost looks like a Barry Bonds drill press.
Yeah. Juiced Bonds.
Yeah. So it's like trying to explain that. And it's a little bit like a drill press and a little bit like a router table. put together.
Yes. I think a lot of our listeners will probably relate to this. Part of it is also that, you know, this is an older mill, so it's completely manual. There's no digital readouts. There is an art form to running a machine like that. Like, there truly is. Like, being able to hand somebody, and I'm not a machinist. I am not a machinist by any means. I have ran Bridgeports before in high school, but I have spent no time in a machine shop learning machinist techniques. There is an art form to running, and there's something really cool about giving somebody a drawing, and they can use dial indicators, setup blocks, all these little machinist tricks to make that down to the thousandth of an inch. You know, that's nuts to me, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things that I'm interested in learning it. And then I don't know how much I'll use it, but I would like to, you know, I will enjoy learning it and being able to make parts where they're needed. You know, there's some times where it's like, oh, it'd be really cool to have a bracket, you know, to fit on this clamp end or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not going to go into production making tools or anything. That's not my, no, but it'll be really cool to be able to make stuff like that.
Did you have a plane? Did somebody have one of you two had a plane or something that needed milled or?
Yep, that's me.
Yep. What was the deal with that? It was like a prototype, or what was it?
It's actually in the, it's in the closet. Phil's going to go grab it. Hold on. Okay. He's going to go get it.
All right.
This was a, so I went down this for a while. I was going down this route of buying tools from England on this auction, this David Stanley auction. Okay. Beautiful auction. They sell really, really nice tools. Like there are tools in there that go for thousands of dollars, but then you got like the Logan Price tools where they're like budget. Nobody wants them. It's like the $5 bucket tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought this long infill plane. Yep. There it is. It's almost as heavy as the Ruckel Vice.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
So
it doesn't fit in the frame of the video shot. You gotta pan it across.
You know, like the opening scene of Spaceballs with the big ship that just keeps going. Yeah. And
so it's an infill plane that does not have the infill. So it's the soul of a plane that somebody started. But what somebody did not do, and the reason it probably went for sale, nobody cut a mouth in it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no mouth in that plane. So, she's rusted since she's been sitting in there. So that those dovetails on there are peened over. They kind of need milled flat. Yep, just like that. They kind of need milled down flat, and a mouth needs cut in that plane. So that is going to be one of the things that I mess with is figuring out how to do that. So, yeah, and it's that type of thing where it's like, hey, this would be really cool to be able to mill these flat, cut the mouth in it. I would like to, and I've learned since that this is not a good idea, but I would like to get like a little furnace to pour metal out of. So like a little foundry.
Okay.
And you could buy them fairly inexpensively, and I would want one to be able to melt and pour copper and brass. But copper, I guess, doesn't machine real well. I guess it's a very, very hard tool or a hard metal to machine. I think it's too sticky. But like, it'd be really cool to be able to pour. And I think there was a plane maker. I think he's still around. His name was Ollie Sparks.
Oh yeah.
And he was doing this where he would, John has one lined up. I know. he would cast little plane bodies and then he'd stick them on his mill and mill them down and make these gorgeous little planes out of them. So I think that'd be kind of fun to mess around with. Again, not doing that to make money, but just to mess around with.
Yeah. Maybe there was no mouth on this because this was supposed to be like an infill sander. You just put like sticky back sandpaper on it, and then you can just.
That's probably what it was. Yeah.
The weight of it just kind of
gives
the pressure. Yep.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So.
Okay, I'll put a photo of the of this jointer cast. That's not really a casting.
Assemblage. Jointer body. Yeah.
Yeah. On the show notes page for this episode. So. Yeah.
Yeah. But. Yeah. No, it'd be interesting. Anybody that has visited my shop knows that very quickly it is filling up. It is filling up.
I think it's filled up and spilled over into.
Okay. You know, I'm not going to argue with that, John, but I'm going to justify it. I pushed some stuff into the storage area to make room for everybody coming in and filming.
Okay.
So he's doing the okay. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I mean, I'm not hating on it. Yeah. Stating a fact.
So. Do you guys believe that there are tools that could live outside of the shop and get moved in when you need them? Like, I mean, I understand that people working in a one-stall garage kind of do that all the time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. All my stuff's kind of shoved into a corner and gets moved out to use it. So, yeah, I'd agree with that. That it's like you can wheel stuff in.
And I also know that there's enough people in our readership that have basically like two shop spaces. Mm-hmm. In the sense that you know, like my dad's current shop is kind of like this, where he's got his bench and what I would call the quiet power tools in the basement, where it's a little more temperature controlled.
Yep.
And the loud, spewy chip kind of tools out in the garage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's like table saw, planer. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. So
that's kind of where I'm at, where it's like, okay, I'm at the point where I'm going to have to figure out what actually stays in here and what can move in and out. So right now, the biggest tools that kind of roll in and out are my dual drum sander, which I think I'm going to sell that. I just don't think I'm going to use it enough. The CNC, we have a CNC from one of the companies that we've worked with that the plan was to do some content for them. So that's here currently. I don't know if that's going to stay here. That might go back to the office and maybe go back to the company. Those are the two that are kind of rolling in and out. And it's easy because, I mean, it's a concrete floor. Just roll them in, roll them out. You know, not that big a deal. My bigger concern is what if, you know, moving them from out there where it's not climate controlled into like an air conditioned space, you know, am I gonna get condensation on them? Are they going to want to rust? You know, that type of stuff. Like that's what I'm more concerned about. And maybe it's not that big an issue. But yeah, I know that stuff is even in a fairly decent sized shop like this, stuff's going to have to be able to be moved when I need it to. So That's why that mill is still on the pallet, so I can pallet jack under it and move it if I need to. It's actually at a decent working height right now, not going to lie.
Yeah.
So.
John, what's been going on with you?
Oh, not a whole lot. I just got a trash project, as I like to call it.
Project's trash.
Yeah. Hey, I don't the way Steve talked about it in the update the other day, he's like, I don't design them. I just build them. He's like, oh, maybe this is trash. I was filming that and I noticed that he said that. And it's funny that my wife was home yesterday and she happened to see the video on Facebook and she's like, what was up with Steve talking about your project there? I was like, I don't know what that was all
like,
about.
It's like, I'm right here.
Oh my God. That's great.
But, you know. But yeah, so it was a tip out garbage can, you know, nothing earth shattering or anything, but I don't think we'd ever done one in Woodsmith. So, you know, it's a good weekend project that people like to build. Yeah. So,
well, and it's funny because that's a project that I feel like I've seen in a lot of homes, like either the tip out trash can or God, my grandma and grandpa. So they always had a tip out trash can set right underneath the phone, but then they had a dual bin one that was a tip out that had they always had potatoes and onions in it.
Yeah.
So like the top one had onions, the bottom one had potatoes.
Yep.
And I was like, you know, they're kind of cool. You know, if you don't have the storage, they lived in a house built in the '50s, so they didn't have a ton of storage in their kitchen. It was perfect.
Yeah. Good useful project that somebody could build quickly. So Thought I'd mix that in with the projects. Keep Steve busy. You know, keep him on his toes.
Keep the rage work going.
Yeah. Keep him motivated. So.
No, I think it's a cool project because I think a tip out thing like that, people have a tendency to overthink the mechanics of it.
Yeah. Because mine is just it sits on the bottom face frame and pivots on that and has a stop. And he was asking, where's the hinges and stuff? And it's like, I don't want any like hardware on it. It just, you know, sits in there so you can pull it out, bolting out as necessary or whatever. So, you know, pretty simple.
Tell me it's got like heart cutouts on the front or like a chicken or something.
Yeah. That's optional.
Right.
Okay. That's for the 90s crowd.
Yeah. Made out of the flattest sawn red oak that you can find.
Yeah. You can do a little like take the metal punch, like the tin, like do a little, you know, pattern in it. Like a pie
as long as the photo set has a, you know, wallpaper border. Like somewhere
or
in there,
maybe some geese or something,
maybe some sponge paint on the wall,
holly it's hobby gold, little thing going
golden
across.
Oak, it's classic. It all comes back around. You know?
It does. I've heard brass is back in.
Yeah, so. I've heard that. So, yeah, it's funny because it's like eventually my kids will come back to our house. It's like, oh, stainless steel is so old. That's so like mid. Early 2000s and
it's so 2018. Like
It's all brass now and so
I've always attributed it to whatever was in your grandparents' house is the cool stuff. Because and I had thought of that years ago and then didn't quite realize it until I had kids to see how it is, because it's like when you see how your parents treat your kids is like, I wish I had your grandparents for parents.
I know. Because
they're cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My parents were weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like every, like anything that was popular for toys and in style, like 30 to 40 years ago is what comes back around, because it's like, people as they have kids that are getting older are nostalgic and bring that thing back, and the kids think they invented it and like that's the new popular thing. And
especially now when you can bring back, you know, toys that were from the 1900s, you know, like
I don't, has Micro Machines ever come back though? Was that a thing when you guys were? Because that was like the hot toy when I was elementary school. The little
that's true.
Tiny
I do
cars
remember
and...
Micro Machines. Yep.
You were probably a little old for it, and Logan, you were probably a little young for it.
Yeah, I was kind of old for it. I was too busy recovering from the Transformers GoBots wars.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that was tough.
Yeah.
No, my favorite toy was an Erector set. Like,
yeah,
I had my parents, I think, did me right, and they got me the big set, so it had a lot of stuff. It had two drills in it for the bolts and nuts. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah, I built a lot of stuff over the years with that. And here I am now buying machinery I don't need.
Yep. it was a gateway.
It's the circle of life.
Yep.
No, we had an Erector set that was I think my dad's when he was a kid from my grandparents. Same thing with just all the little tiny pieces and
sharp edges. Like, how did you not cut yourself?
My brother and I built a Starship Enterprise from the original series, just all out of Erector set stuff. And it was in my head, it was super impressive. Now, what it would be like to see it now, I don't know, but it was cool when we did it. There you go. We've come to the end of another episode of the Shop Notes podcast. Thanks to Type on Glue for sponsoring the podcast this month. If you want a glue for your projects, you want to check it out. I've been using their speed set for a couple of TV show projects here the last few days, and it's been really handy, especially for things like on the interior of projects. You have those little glue blocks to stabilize joints and add some strength to base and corner assemblies and things like that. Speed Set's perfect because you can just put it on, do the little rub joint thing, spring clamp for a few minutes, boom, moving on. So you want to check out their whole selection at tightbond.com. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.